Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na kaya ha ane kak, gunil cheesh.
From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, September 5th. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gwyneth Chi, Shawa, Tux, Gnusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Today, we chat with comedian Brooks Whelan, who is back in Juneau for two shows tonight at the Gold Town. He also filmed a special called Alive in Alaska last time he toured Alaska, which is now available on YouTube. We talk with Darren Snyder on this week's Garden Talk about things to do towards the end of your garden season. And we begin today with the Constitution. It's the subject of the first show of the season at Perseverance Theater. It's opening next Friday, September 12th, for a three-week run. It's called What the Constitution Means to Me. It's an autobiographical play by Heidi Schreck, nominated for a Tony Award, and it was also a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. The play covers themes of women's rights, immigration, and more. And I'm joined now in the studio to talk about this wonderful piece of theatrical endeavor. I have actors Allison Wade, who plays Heidi. Gwyneth Cheesh, Wasiti. How are you, Allison?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Happy Friday. And also I have actor Ariel Estrada, who plays the Legionnaire.
Yes. And I also play the character of Danny later
awesome.
On in the play.
Okay, great. Wonderful to have you here, Gwyneth Cheesh.
Thank you so much.
And also we have Kylie Ferguson, who is the Community Partnership Manager. Wasiti, how are you?
That's me. Gwyneth Cheesh for having us.
Of course. It's so good to have you here. Okay. So let's set the table, I guess. Maybe, Allison, will you share what this play is?
Yes, of course. Heidi Schreck, it's like you said, it's autobiographical about her life. She is an actor and playwright, and when she was a teenager, she competed in these like speech competitions. She would give speeches about the Constitution at American Legion Halls for prize money.
Oh.
And she was thinking about that time that she did that when she was a teenager, because she was like obsessed with the Constitution and like this little teenage genius when it came to the Constitution. And she like, I mean, spoiler alert, paid for her college to because of these competitions that she
went to.
Wow. But she was like at one point like remembering that she was obsessed with the Constitution, and she's like, what was it? And so she revisits her teenage self based on her memory of, you know, that she had when she was in her mid-40s when she wrote the play. And so she kind of goes back in time and like, what was that like when she was a teenager? And why was she obsessed with this? And then it kind of evolves into the lens of now, the like who she is now, and is like, oh, hang on, and kind of like puts pieces together, talks about things that maybe she avoided as a teenager, her own point of view that she had then and what that how that differs now. And it I learned a lot being in the play about the Constitution, and I feel a little bit like from being in the play, I'm like, actually, like suddenly I'm that person when people talk about the Constitution. I'm like, because I feel like I'm a little bit of an expert on two particular amendments that she addresses in the play. And something that I really like about the play, I know you didn't ask, but I think that I can just really identify with Heidi and I get really, really excited about the subject matter because it's not necessarily just about the Constitution, right? So sometimes you see it's like, ugh, what the Constitution means to me. Like sometimes that can feel kind of heavy. But the subjects that I talk about almost every single day with my friends.
Interesting.
Like it's very timely and not in a way that feels to me overly political. It's very, very personal.
How is the play constructed? Are you talking directly to the audience?
I
am. You Heidi now and then you're reliving what those experiences
yes.
were? Okay.
Yeah. And it's I'm in the American Legion Hall. That's where
okay.
I am.
Okay.
It is, you know, there are points in the play where it's a little bit dreamy. But yeah, the audience really is another character in the show.
I see. Okay. And Ariel, tell me a little bit about the character that you play. You play a couple different characters.
Yes, I play two characters in the show. The first one is the Legionnaire, but his name is based on a real person, a childhood mentor and friend of Heidi, Mel Yonken, who was a Legionnaire and accompanied Heidi and her family across the country, mentoring her, also judging these contests. And he was in Wenatchee, Washington, in the American Legion outpost, was the commander of that outpost. So, and he was a really wonderful guy. I read up on him as part of the research for this show. And he was very passionate about making sure that children and teenagers learned about the Constitution. Yes. And, of course, he was a veteran, a Navy veteran. And it was wonderful to be asked to be part of this show because my dad was a Legionnaire and also a veteran in Sitka. If you saw my show last year that I did at Perseverance, Full Contact, I spoke a lot about my dad in the show and the fact that he was a veteran. And it really influenced not only his life but the life of my family and everyone around. And I also got a scholarship from the Legion as well.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so fun. See, you learn something new every day, right? That's kind of cool. That's excellent. And then you play another character. You said Danny?
Danny, yes. Well, spoilers, but he is a friend of Heidi's, a personal friend of Heidi's in real life, and talks about what it's like to be a man in this society.
I see. Okay. Yes.
I also will say it's funny that we're saying spoilers, but they're not really spoilers.
Yeah. Right. they're more enticing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're more enticing.
Yeah, because the show has many themes, many subjects, and I'm assuming that, like you said, Allison, that it may feel heavy, but I feel like there's also, I think Heidi's other plays that she's written some other Grand Concourse and a few other plays that are more narrative driven, where this is like a one person sort of situation, although it has other characters in it. But there's also humor in the play, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, it's necessary.
We have to laugh, right?
Yeah, I mean, with the subjects, I mean, otherwise, what, we would just be, what, listening to a finance committee or something?
Right,
when we're
right.
I think that's the great gift that Heidi has in her writing. And also, something else that Ariel mentioned that I was reminded of is that we also get to have an actual teenager from Juno in the play as well.
Oh, yeah. Tell me a little bit about that.
In the second part, which is really exciting. There's an actual teenage debater in the play. And it's not even that they're an actor. Like, they play themselves as a debater. And so that's really cool.
Do you debate them?
We do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Oh, that's
yeah,
so fun.
It's actual, and it's pretty
intense.
It's pretty intense, and it keeps me on edge. Like, we don't, I mean, there's a coin toss. We're not prepared with what side we're going to take. I mean, we're prepared as much as we can in the side, but we don't know in the moment which side we're going to take.
Yeah, I remember reading the play and seeing that at the end, when the teenagers come in, there's like three or four different versions. And in the script, Heidi will be like, well, on this night in wherever, we did this version and then we did this version. So are you having to memorize different sections?
Yep.
And then on each night, it might be like, well, it depends on the flip of the coin?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How fun.
Oh, so fun.
You're like, which one am I doing tonight?
Yeah, I sit there and hope it's one side because I have it a little bit better than the other.
Yeah.
And
we have to mention that both of these high school students are also on the JD High debate team.
Yes.
So nice. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. One of them was a state champion.
I saw the list of them, and one of them had actually been in the show or on the show last spring, I think, when they were about to go to state or they had gone
awesome.
To state.
Awesome. Yeah. Olivia Gomez will be playing the debater, and then Maddie Bass is her understudy.
Yeah, nice. That is so cool. That's really fun. And also then may require repeat viewing of the performance.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And what's cool about it, too, is that second act, I mean, there's a chance that you come and, like, based on the coin flip, you're going to get a different
show.
You're going to get a different show. And there's even additional improvisation at the end as well that will be completely new and different every single night.
That's amazing. That sounds really fun. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're talking about What the Constitution Means to Me, which opens next Friday at Perseverance Theater. It is going to be opening on September 12th, and it runs for 3 weeks here in Juneau, and then it will be making its way up to Anchorage, where a different actor will play the parts that Ariel is playing. But
Dawson Moore?
Dawson Moore will be playing the part up there, but Allison will be going up with the show to Anchorage. So let your friends in Anchorage know that the show is coming up there as well. So I'm really curious to talk about some of the themes in the play. You mentioned that there's two amendments that basically are dealt with in the play.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and your experience of learning about those amendments? Because that sounds really cool.
Yeah. Well, one amendment that Heidi, I think she claims to be her favorite, is the Ninth Amendment. And let me see if I can say it. Let's see. The Ninth Amendment says that the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And that is
excellent.
Basically about how just because a certain right isn't, what am I going to do? I'll just quote the play. Why not? just because a certain right isn't listed in the Constitution doesn't mean you don't have that right.
Right. Okay.
And how much the magic of the Ninth Amendment has been used at different points and in different Supreme Court decisions.
Mm.
And then she also talks about the 14th Amendment, I'll just say it. The 14th Amendment made the 14th and 15th Amendment made newly freed slaves citizens, guaranteed them equal protections under the law, and guaranteed their right to vote.
I see.
As well.
Okay.
And so she talks about basically the different clauses of the 14th Amendment Section 1 and how those relate to her life and her family history as related to those. Something that is really important in these American Legion Hall Constitution competitions is that you have to draw a personal connection between yourself and the Constitution.
Okay.
And so that was kind of the whole point. And so Heidi talks about the personal connections that she has. And then it made me realize, of course, how many personal connections that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And like really that it does impact all of us. Mm-hmm. And not to be like a Pollyanna about it, but mm-hmm. it's like every night with rehearsal, I'm like, this is so true.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just some abstract document, and I can understand why people are obsessed with it, because it kind of used to be other people that were interested in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, this is actually fascinating and interesting, and it changes. She talks about how the Constitution changes and how it's like the Supreme Court, the people that were on the court during certain Supreme Court cases, what their lives were like, and maybe why they made these decisions based on their own personal lives. So
interesting. Yeah, that's really fun. Like to sort of examine it in from Heidi's point of view, obviously, because she's a real person who'd gone through these experiences, but then you playing the role and sort of having your own sort of enlightenment about
right.
it. Yeah.
And it's also, I feel like I identify so much with Heidi.
Mm.
And sometimes being in a play, there are certain things like I want to say out loud about myself, but I get to hide behind this character, but I get it. You know?
Yeah, this one especially. Ariel, how was it for you in terms of the experience? I know you're supporting Allison here in this journey, but you're kind of like the guide in a way, and you kind of lead her through these experiences. But you also probably learned a little bit about the Constitution as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, with the personal part of my connection to the Constitution would be as a man of color, Filipino man, also a gay man, and how these amendments have affected our lives and how we've been able to actually have rights under these amendments. And I also learned so much about how, about more spoilers, but what kind of Constitution we have in the United States, because not every constitution of every country is the same. In our case, for the United States, it's much more something called negative rights, a negative rights document, which isn't particularly aggressive in terms of giving additional rights to people.
Mm.
But I can't say more without spoiling.
Right. So much to learn.
Right. Well, I'm curious about that. Allison, what do you hope that the audience like takes away from this experience?
Well, I hope that they feel activated.
Activated. That's a great word.
Yeah.
What a great word.
I have struggled a little bit recently in my own activism. I've felt disheartened at times. And I feel like that this play, at least just like gaining a lot of knowledge from something and also tying that to a personal story, can feel really activating. I mean, just playing the part feels that way for me when I'm like, I don't know if I'll ever be an activist in the way that I used to. But being in this play has helped me a lot.
To sort of maybe rekindle the fire?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. It is interesting because I feel like as you get, I don't know if it's as we get older, but also as we sort of get more entrenched in our community, like all of a sudden, like when we're younger, you have your own sort of idealized version of what you think it will be, and you have your own things that you're going for. But then you start to settle, not in a bad way. I mean, like settle into your community, and then you're like, yeah, I want to actually know what the assembly's talking about. I actually want to know what's going on with Eagle Crest. I want to actually know what the finances are of our city and how this is working. Like, I need to be a part of that, you know? And so that's really fascinating. I think it sounds like a wonderful journey. Now, I know that this play also, you have like a cajillion lines. So what's what's the process been like in rehearsal? How have you all been sort of going about rehearsal?
Oh, it's rehearsal has been awesome. There has been so much support. Something that I love about Perseverance is that every year they get interns. Is that right? And
yeah.
So this fresh, new energy that you just get every single year. And we have two incredible interns, Allison and Gabriel, who are just ready to help. They have run lines with me. Gabriel takes the most detailed line notes, and they're just there for us. And yeah, I think that it's because of that energy, and of course Leslie, the director, but it feels kind of old school wonderful in the rehearsal room. It feels like that, like, exciting young theater energy.
It feels
like college. It feels like why I'm doing theater.
Yeah.
It's great, great energy.
Yeah, that's so fantastic. Well, and also welcome back, Ariel, to Juno.
Thank you.
You were here last year, as you mentioned, for the second show last year, Full Contact, which was a one-person show. And Kylie, after What the Constitution Means to Me, I believe you have another one-person show. Let's talk a little bit about the rest of the season at Perseverance.
Yeah. So coming up in December, we'll be having a show called Buyer and Seller.
Mm-hmm.
And then in March, we'll have a very cool show called Pueblo Revolt.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about each of those shows, if you can.
Okay, let me see what I can do.
Just a tagline, a slog, or whatever. Slag. What did they used
slogan?
To call that? Anyway.
Logline.
Logline, thank
it.
You. Slog, the slog line. That's so funny, a logline.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ariel.
Okay, what can I say about these shows? Buyer and Seller is a fascinating deep dive into a celebrity who cannot legally be mentioned and what their hypothetical mall underneath their house would be.
Oh, can I add on to that? The celebrity that cannot be mentioned is one of my favorite celebrities, and they have a very long book, memoir.
Which is what inspired this play.
It's so good. It's my favorite memoir. It is, let me see if I can detail it. It's 48 hours long, and it's $50 on Audible.
Whoa.
So just look that up.
Okay, that'll give you a clue.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's kind of, and that's like a comedy as
well. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, very funny. Yeah, perfect for this. And that's coming in December?
That's going to be coming in December.
Okay, and then you said in the spring we have something, what's the other play called?
Yeah, it's called Pueblo Revolt.
Okay.
And it's kind of exploring the story of these two indigenous boys at a very, like, revolutionary time with contemporary language, which is always fun.
Cool.
And, like, what does it look like to try to be, identify as queer, identify as different than your community?
Hmm.
And how do you find love in those times? How do you find acceptance? And we're just very excited to be bringing it to the stage.
That's awesome. That's so cool. So, and of course, you know, you can find out more information at ptalaska.org of all the shows, including What the Constitution Means to Me, opening next Friday, September 12th. But there is a preview on Wednesday, which I guess would be September 10th.
Yes, it is.
What time is the preview at?
The preview is at 7:30. It is Pay As You Can.
Pay As You Can. And then during the run, there's also a couple other Pay As You Cans,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll be doing one on Sunday, September 14th, and then also on Thursday, September 18th.
Excellent. Yeah, access for all. I love that. That's one of the best things about a Pay As You Can. It's wonderful. So I think the ptalaska.org is the place to go. I want to thank Allison Wade, who's playing Heidi. Break a leg, as they say, in the theatrical endeavors. Ariel Estrada, who's playing the Legionnaire / Danny, also. And appreciate you all coming in. Kylie Ferguson, Community Partnership Manager. Who works over there at Perseverance, who started as a fellow.
I did. I started as an apprenticeship, then into a fellowship, and then they kept me around, excited to be here still.
It's the best. I love it when they hook them.
Yeah. One of those things where it's like, oh, you came to Juno for a year, and then now it's been, what, 4?
We're going to be going on 4, yeah.
Ooh, congratulations.
That's I'm voting incredible. Ariel next.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Hey, I grew up in Sitka, so yeah. It's not that far.
We'll get
not
you.
That far from it. I love it. Awesome. Thank you so much, Gwyneth Cheese, for coming in. You can find out more at ptalaska.org. This is Juno Afternoon. Let's have a little bird note.
This is Bird Note. It's a sunny September morning at Red Rock Canyon in the Mojave Desert. I spot hummingbirds, flycatchers, and a family of gambel's quail. But what I'm really after are birds of prey, and I don't see any. As it turns out, desert raptors are being hit extra hard by climate change.
So desert species have a special set of challenges. We're really getting extreme warming in the Southwest.
Blair Wolf is a biologist at the University of New Mexico. He says that hotter and drier deserts mean less water, leading to fewer plants and therefore less prey.
And that leads to a general more difficult problem for raptors to find food necessary for both energy and water. Raptors get most of their water from the food they eat.
Which can lead to lower rates of reproduction.
They've got to be able to make eggs and then find food for their nestlings.
Heat stress itself, even a few degrees of warming, can be a cause of death for raptors. In recent years, we've seen record-breaking temperatures sweeping across the Southwest.
When temperatures aren't even dropping below 95 or 100 degrees at night until 3 in the morning, you know you've got a problem.
And it's only getting hotter. I get back into my car without seeing a single raptor. But on the drive home, there it is, a turkey vulture, circling high above the greenest grass around, a water-guzzling golf course. This artificial ecosystem is an accidental oasis for a bird, but it doesn't solve the long-term problems they're facing in the desert. For Bird Note, I'm Sonia Swanson.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Support comes from Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, with outdoor clothing, gear, and footwear for the whole family. Now carrying women's workwear from Dovetail and Aloe Yoga Pants. Located in the Mendenhall Mall and online at nuggetoutfitter.com.
You are listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Last year, comedian Brooks Whelan toured Alaska. While here, he filmed a special called Alive in Alaska, which also includes a really cool 30-minute documentary of his time in various communities throughout the state. Here's a little clip from that show.
I think about having kids. I do. I'm 37. I could have kids. I think about it. Until literally every time I call my brother, who has three boys under the age of 12. Yeah. Every time I call him, 30 seconds into our phone call, his entire life turns into the back half of the film Point Break. We'll just be chatting along, and then out of nowhere, he's like, 1 second, what's in your hands? Show me those hands! One's on the roof, one's on the roof! Where'd you get a Nixon mask? A joke does better if you've seen Point Break.
You may have seen Brooks on that tour at his sold-out shows at the Gold Town. You may also know him from his time on Saturday Night Live or his appearances on a variety of late-night talk shows or other television shows. Brooks is back tonight for two shows only, again, at the Gold Town. The 7 p.m. show is sold out, and there is a smattering of tickets available for the 9 p.m. show. It's an all-new hour of comedy. Welcome now, Brooks Whelan, to the show. How are you, Brooks?
I'm good. I hadn't heard that joke since I did that, and that was a good joke.
It is a good joke.
Yeah, I was like, man, my new stuff sucks. That's solid.
Well, you know what's interesting is I was watching the film, which just, I know it came out last year, but it just premiered on YouTube yesterday.
Well,
I think.
Yeah, so we did this crazy tour of Alaska. We did McCarthy. Oh, dude, it was nuts. McCarthy straight down here to Juneau, over to Sitka, to Cordova, to Soldotna, to Talkeetna, up to Fairbanks and back to Anchorage, all in the row every day. And that's too far. It broke me.
Yeah.
And we were filming the whole thing, and I just had all this extra footage from all of those shows because the special came out, and I didn't want the special to be like a travel doc. I wanted it to be a good hour of stand-up.
Sure.
And so, but then I had like 80 hours of footage, and then my friend just hit me up. He's like, what are you doing with that footage? I was like, I don't know, nothing. He's like, can I have it? And then he just edited together this 30-minute travel doc that is fun that just came out yesterday through 800 Pound Gorilla, which was the production company.
Yeah, so you can search on YouTube, Alive in Alaska, Brooks Whelan, and you'll see it. And the first hour is the show.
Yep, and then after that is a half-hour tour doc. I'm like,
yeah.
Basically, what I do like about the tour doc is my first 5 minutes of the special is about Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me like 2 weeks of doing all those shows to figure out what five, I think, were genuinely good minutes. That is only a person who's like been screaming around Alaska for a minute could, tell.
Yeah.
And the mini tour doc is kind of basically me just coming up with that opening 5 minutes.
Yeah, and the section on Juno has a really, you're up in Colette's office at the Gold Town.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
trying to write a joke that then you see that you do inside the Gold Town. I love the beginning of the show, the actual comedy show, because you do jokes locally. Is that something that you do wherever you go? Do you try to get a flavor of what's going on in the town?
Absolutely. I don't like the most popular thing right now for comedians to do is like crowd work clips, which I really, that's not my jam. I don't know. I'm just like, hey, yeah. What do you do? Oh, that's stupid. And I think that's lame. But what I do to not like burn materials, I'll go spend a day in a town and then have like 3-4 minutes about that town that then I'll put that out to be like, oh, I was in Ketchikan last night, you know, and I wrote some pretty fun Ketchikan jokes that I really like that I'll be like, oh, yeah, we'll release those and it doesn't feel hacky.
Right. Did you film last night too?
Yeah, I kind of shoot everything.
You shoot everything.
But just like with my phone in the back. Like,
right.
I'm not, the main thing about this tour that I'm doing right now that I'm on is I'm not filming it professionally or for any reason because it kind of sucks to do that really cool Alaska tour and the whole time you're producing and being like, oh, we have to recreate this fun we just had for
right,
the camera.
Right.
So this one is kind of like, all right, I learned my lessons not to do them all in a row. I don't need to go to Fairbanks. It's too far away. Soldotna sucked. Let's skip those and add in Homer and then finish with Dutch Harbor.
Right.
So this is more relaxing and like way, the vibes are much more chill.
And doing it like with your phone, then it's more just like BTS behind the scenes kind of views, and you can still create. Because I feel like you mentioned, I know I've seen a lot of those clips, the shorts, you know, with the crowd work and stuff. And there's some people who are really good at that.
Mm-hmm, totally. It's just, I'm just not good
at
it.
That's not, and everybody's got a different jam, right? But I do think, or do you, I guess, like, feels like the social media is a huge part of being a comedian on tour these days.
No, it is, like, completely changed my industry. Like, every industry changed with technology. But, you know, like, I grew up loving stand-up comedy, being obsessed with it. And, like, you know, the thing was, okay, you go on the road, you get a Just for Laughs, it's Montreal Comedy Festival. Then you'll get like a small 5-minute set on Comedy Central. Then you do a Comedy Central half hour. Then you do a Comedy Central hour. And then we go from there. And then, you know, Instagram and TikTok just completely circumvented the whole industry.
Yeah.
Which, for better or for worse, that like, you know, people are always putting up clips. It's like a clip-based like medium now, which is, for me, as like I'm 39, so I'm kind of like, no, but what about like a really great 45 minutes? Like, to me, I love that, but you know, what sells tickets is
the quick clips.
Quick clips where you're telling people they're gay.
And it used to be people would go on like, you know, Carson or Letterman or whatever, and that's where you would experience a new comedian, and you'd see that 5-minute set that they would do. And you'd be like, oh, man. And then you hear they're coming to your town, and then you're like checking them out and stuff. But now it's like you just randomly find people.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, like I need to be better at social media for sure. And I just need to be, you know, it's a game of self-promotion, which I'm not great at, but when I make something, I really try my best. So that's why this like Alive in Alaska like tour doc, I'm like, I really worked really hard on that, and I'm really proud of that. So I have no problem like pushing that really hard to be like, check this out.
Yeah, and it like I mentioned that, Alive in Alaska is now on YouTube included with the documentary in there. And the New York Times called it one of the top three specials of 2024, top three comedy specials. And it reminded me of a T-shirt I used to have in high school. It said, number three, why try harder?
Yeah.
Right? Because I love how they say one of the three, you know?
Well, it was broken up into, they said, best streaming special.
Oh, I got you. Right.
It was Ronnie Chang's, and then mine was best, like, self-released special.
Okay, I got you. Right.
And then Nikki Glaser just had her own. She was, like, special. Like, she just, like... Was,
she
like,
has her own category.
Yeah, truly. I mean, it was basically like breakout star. So it was, like, me, Nikki, and Ronnie, and I'm like, all right, well, those guys are doing pretty good.
It's so funny for Nikki to have the breakout from the Tom Brady roast, which I knew of Nikki way before that, but it's like, I guess a bunch of people found out who she was from that roast, and she just has blown up even further.
But what rocks about Nikki, and I moved to Kansas City and when I was 20 and Nikki was still there, and what rules about Nikki and like what makes sense for her handling this success so well is she's a really great stand-up comedian who also does roasts. Like she's not just a roast comedian. She's an amazing comic who then killed at the roast and then had the, this complete back catalog to back up what she just showed everyone she could do.
She didn't have a sophomore slump because she already had all the material.
Yeah, she was already full senior, man.
Yeah, she was always there. So that covers that. But now you're back in Alaska, which means you must have liked it here.
I love it here. I really love Alaska. This is probably my fifth time being here.
Wow.
I just like coming up here. And like, what's cool about stand-up comedy, especially like DIY stuff like this tour I'm doing is like, some comics are like, oh, I want to, like, you know, go to cities. I'm like, not me, man. Let's check out Dutch Harbor. Let's go to Unalaska, you know.
Right,
it's like it's an excuse to go see the world.
Yeah.
And I brought my girlfriend and my buddies opening for me. Justin Sands, an Alaskan comic, is on tour with us. And
nice.
It's like just kind of like this roving band of, like, we hang out all day and then go do the shows at night.
Yeah, I think yesterday when we were confirming for today, you were like, I'm hiking in Ketchikan. I don't know. I don't have cell service. I'll see you tomorrow or something.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, yesterday, dude, we woke up at like 6, had some coffee. Dude, yesterday, Ketchikan, right down the street, the guy had a heart attack and ran over a tourist. Did you hear about that?
No.
That was yesterday. We were like, I don't know, 50 yards from it. Like, it was crazy. This tourist died yesterday in Ketchikan. And like, but we didn't know. We didn't even know what happened, really. We were just all these police and stuff.
Yeah.
So we bounced and just went to this place called Herring Cove. Saw some black bears, like, just hiking. And was like, that's crazy. And then we're hitchhiking back. And saw bubbles in the water. I was like, what's up with the bubbles? And then a freaking humpback whale came up. And I was like, this is the coolest stuff I've ever seen, dude. Yeah. This is like by 11 in the morning. And then hiked and then went and did the show last night. And it was so fun.
Well,
I loved it.
I know you're from Iowa because you talk about that in your show and stuff. And is there, do you feel like there's similar, because you guys outdoors in Iowa. So is there some similarities there?
No, Iowa sucks, man. It's like, it's outdoors in the sense of farming, you know?
Okay.
It's like the plains. But like here you have actual nature, you know?
Okay.
Like I consider Iowa to be, growing up there, to be very much like an island. It felt very isolated. Like it was, I felt very far away from nature and I lived in the woods. And like, that's why, I don't know. I have like a rule, like for me, nature starts like west of the Rocky Mountains.
I understand that.
Cause I lived in New York and they say they have like great state parks. And I was just like, I'm spoiled by the West Coast and like Alaska is like California on heroin. It's awesome.
We think of it as one of the best places in the world, that's for sure. So this new special, this new material you got, what kind of subjects are we covering in the new special? Is it something, because I know you're probably getting a little bit older, are you dealing with some of that, or what's going on?
I guess dealing with like kind of being frustrated. The main thesis right now is like being frustrated with like boomers. Like I'm annoyed with the boomer generation for, you know, like ruining the world and then saying that like they worked hard.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like
my parents bought a house for like $80.
I know, right?
You know, and I'm like, all right, well then maybe I don't have a house. And I'm like, when are you gonna get a house? I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? You bought all the houses.
Right.
Relax. So yeah. I guess it's just kind of me being a little grumpy with like the people who put Trump in power and complaining. I'm like, why are you complaining? You got the guy.
Yeah.
He did the thing.
Go
away.
Yeah.
Everyone go away.
Everyone go away. So, because I know in the special you mentioned you were 37. Are you 38 now?
I'm 39. So I taped
39.
That. I just turned 39.
Okay.
And I taped that like a little over a year ago.
And is 39, is that a millennial? Is that a Gen X?
I think it would be a millennial probably. I'm not sure. I don't know. But also.
What year were you born?
1986.
86. Okay. I think you're an old millennial.
Yeah. But also I grew up in Iowa, which is 5 years behind. So
right.
I think I'm full of Gen X.
Yeah. Maybe Gen X.
Yeah. We get everything.
Gen X spirit.
Yeah,
right? Gen X at
for
heart.
Sure. Like
I love
in the sense of don't sell out. Selling out sucks.
Yeah.
Do, you know.
We're never going to buy a house.
Yeah.
We're never going to own our own home.
Yeah.
The world is terrible. And
but we're going to go to Unalaska.
Yeah.
And tell some jokes at the Rat Saloon.
I love that.
Yeah. It's fun.
And you're also going to be telling jokes tonight. At the Gold Town Nickelodeon. As I mentioned, you have a 7 o'clock show, which is sold out.
Yep.
I checked right before showtime. The 9 o'clock show wasn't sold out yet. But
I think before I came in here, there was 20 tickets left.
So there's just a few tickets left there.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to goldtownnick.com and get your tickets for the show. And if you want to find out more about Brooks, you can go to brookswheelan.com. That's Brooks and the last name Wheelan, Whelan. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Wheelan.
Okay, Wheelan.
Yeah. Even if you said it wrong, I'd be like, it's fine.
Yeah, it's all good, right? That's the Gen X in us. We don't care.
Yeah. I mean, I have that joke in my special. If someone served me fettuccine with a finger in it, I wouldn't send it back. I'd be like, they're working hard. Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, that's so funny. Brooks, thanks so much for coming in and sharing a little bit with us.
I love Juno. I'm always excited to come back. Also, just a shout out to the Gold Town, like Colette, who runs it. She lets us live on our houseboat when we're here.
Oh, that's so great.
That's such a cool thing. Such a cool move. This town rules.
Juno loves Colette Costa.
Yeah.
She's kind of the queen of Juno.
That's great.
And
I get it.
In addition to the Gold Town, she's an amazing singer.
Mm-hmm.
She has her own band. I don't even know if you know that.
She has
her own band.
Yeah.
A High Costa Living, it's called.
she's
also very funny herself.
She's very funny.
She's hilarious. She
surrounds herself by very cool, interesting people. Last time we were here, we had a really great time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brooks, for coming in. You can catch more of Brooks in just a few minutes over on KXLO on our sister station, 100.7 or 101.7, with DJ Kelly. Brooks is going to hop over there and chat with her and listen to some tunes. So
can't
that's
wait.
Cool.
I honestly, I love, yeah. who doesn't love music? But I'm like, I love when I got to force people to listen to the music I like.
Yeah, there you go. Get your own playlist going on over there. Thanks for joining us on Juno Afternoon, Brooks.
Thanks a bunch. That was really fun.
Okay. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're going to hear a little Star Party. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosis with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the center of the universe. Humans have always wanted to be the center of everything, and starting in the 4th century BC, the Greek scientist developed a geocentric model that the Earth was the center of the universe, and the Greek mathematician, astronomer Ptolemy in the 1st century AD developed mathematical structures that assume that the Earth was the center of the universe. And these mathematical equations were able to project the positions of the planets quite accurately with that assumption. And the Ptolemaic model continued for 1,400 years until the time of Copernicus, Galileo, and Newton that showed from observations of the night sky and also through mathematical structures that the sun was the center of the universe, and that's called the heliocentric view. And until the 1920s, it was believed that the universe, the center of the universe, was our Milky Way galaxy that our solar system is contained in. And it wasn't until the late 1920s, from the work of Curtis and Hubble and the development of the Big Bang theory, that it was found from observation and mathematical structures that our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, was one of billions of galaxies in the universe. And it was decided through cosmology that our universe was homogeneous and isotropic, the same in all areas. So it lacks a central point, and it's expanding at all points, like the surface of a balloon, where all objects on the surface of a balloon are moving away from all other objects. So there is no center. Every point in the universe is a center. And that's the current state of cosmology. This is Steve Kosis with Marie Drake Planetarium. We're doing public shows. Our schedule is on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
That was a little Star Party with Steve Kosis from the Marie Drake Planetarium. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Boston Christopher. Once again, I am joined by Darren Snyder from the UAF Cooperative Extension. Gunath Cheesh, Yugidi, thank you so much for coming in again, Darren. Wasiti, how are you today?
I'm good, Boston. Thank you. It's great to be here.
And I, as you came in, I've been in the office all day, but you said the sun is shining.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It keeps coming.
It keeps coming. We love it. We can't. I'll take it. I will take more of it. What are we thinking about this week, Darren, in terms of gardening?
Yeah, well, I thought that we just do a little bit of a pre-planning for the coming fall, as summery as it feels right now. Fall is around the corner in a few weeks, and it's just a good chance right now to look ahead and what's coming, and to do a lot of kind of preparing for that. And so I've got a bit of information for you on that one.
Awesome. And I know you sent me this cool thing. You're probably going to list some of the things on here, not all of them, but there's a ton. Mm-hmm. I'll put this link on the episode for this Juno Afternoon, also on the Garden Talk podcast as well. But it's an Alaska Gardener's Fall and Winter To-Do List. You can find this on the Cooperative Extension Service. But like I said, I'll put that link on the episodes of the podcast so people can catch this. But I know we're going to talk a little bit about it here.
Yeah, for sure. And it is an excellent checklist. I it may seem like we're jumping the gun a little bit because it is not quite fall yet. But there's a lot that we need to do in Alaska. We know that anything from like order times, if we're going to be ordering anything, that we should be a few weeks out, or if we're just gathering materials, a lot of these things we want to do in the fall, we don't want to be looking around and scratching around and not have what we need when the time comes. So this is a little bit of pre-planning. And, you know, usually our last frost dates, our average last frost date in this area is at the end of September. So that's
coming soon.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. About 3 to 4 weeks, we may see our first frost. So,
and if you don't start thinking about it now,
yeah,
you might get caught up in something. All of a sudden, the frost hits and you're like, I'm toast.
Yeah, and as we know, the rain and the wind will start ripping through here, you know, any moment. Mm-hmm. It could be in the middle of summer, let alone right now. It's more likely.
Mm-hmm.
So again, just kind of being ready in various ways.
Mm.
We could just step into it a little
bit
here.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. A lot of our perennials, a lot of our plants, we've already, even our annuals, we've either harvested them or they're ready to get removed. And so getting that dead material out from your garden is a good idea. The dead material a lot of times can harbor diseases and insects that you don't want if you just leave them there for the winter. So the obvious thing to do in that case is to compost. And there are a lot of options around composting. We're not going to get into all the different kinds right here right now. But again, Extension Service does have a publication specifically on that to share about it. And you don't have to have, you know, your own compost pile even. You can even have a neighbors that you can work together with because composting is generally a little bit more complicated than people think. You can pile things up, but you can also do it a little bit better than that, whether you choose to use a vessel. Or if you don't want to do it yourself, Juno Compost, as many people know, is an excellent company, and she's doing such a great job of that. So I encourage people who don't want to compost yourself to, and you may not know, but you can bring yard wastes as well to her facility, as well as the food scraps pickup that is offered. You just have to get onto the website and make payment for dropping stuff off. I did just take a peek at it, and anything that's not kind of clean leaves are things that she's going to charge for delivery, but it's worth it.
Okay.
Now, if you're thinking about the winter to come, you're and a gardener, there's all kinds of various infrastructure that many people have, trellises or poles or things like that. And so you want to many times just get that stuff and out of there and start moving it to a place that you want to store it for the winter, somewhere that's not going to get covered by snow. And having a place for that is part of the thought pattern here. And so as we are towards the end of our growing season, there's going to be a little bit less gardening going on, a little bit more time, a little bit more maybe opportunity for you to think about, do I want to expand my garden? Do I want to add anything such as a garden shed? Now would be the right time to be thinking about designs, thinking about if you're going to build it yourself, if you're going to try and go find one that's already pre-built, what's the right size, location, think about where the snow is going to be falling, think about access to it just for convenience sake. But that idea of a garden shed, you know, we all know that those of us who garden, that there's always more stuff than we know what to do with. And
right.
So having a good shed system and using it and putting stuff in there.
Do you go over somewhere in terms of like what are the pieces that you might leave out? But then because you're talking about putting certain things away, like the trellises or something like that, are there things that are more susceptible to winter elements, right? Versus things that may not be.
Yeah. So as far as like leaving out your dirt in your bed, that's about it. And so those the garden beds themselves in preparing to put them to sleep, as it were, for the winter. There are quite a few steps with that, and we might want to dig deeper into that later on. But at this point, many people still have their potatoes in the ground, carrots in the ground, stuff like that. But when we're talking about those beds, we want to think about mulching those beds and getting some type of materials on top of them. And at this point, you may want to even when the rains come. And you're looking at specifically your potato harvest. You're going to want to have some plastic available. Black plastic is kind of the standard. And then you're going to want to have plastic to cover the beds with. And there's a lot of, and we do consider that to be a mulch type. Anything that covers the soil is a mulch. But we use that to keep the water off of the, in that case, the potatoes as in preparation for harvest. But also it's a practice as just to kind of go forward with what you're talking about, what's being left out. A lot of times if our garden has been, if we've taken care of it well, we've amended the soil in various ways, again, that I can get into in a future conversation. But then as we mulch on top of it with seaweed and other things that we have, then covering it with plastic is a way that we can have that soil just be kind of happier, because nothing out there in our cultivated garden really wants to get rained on and snowed on and just wet and cold the entire winter. Those things that we can mulch and cover, it's a good idea to consider if we can do that or not. I was just talking to a gentleman at the Juneau Community Gardens harvest fair last weekend, and he was sharing about his success with asparagus, and a lot of us have had varying degrees of success. Actually, the best asparagus I've seen has been on the side of this KTOO building.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's got that warm wall there and protection from some rain, and it's nice, strong asparagus. Whereas if we leave it out in the elements, this gentleman swore to, upon the practice of covering his asparagus with plastic after mulching it lightly. With organic materials of some sorts, whether it's compost or what have you, but just to protect it from that rain with the freeze and thaw. And so it's just one of those things where when you look at a garden in the wintertime, it should just look like some mounds, essentially.
Right.
Anything you're leaving out is probably not going to, be a good idea because it's going to get, messed up or what
have you.
Makes
sense. Cover it, protect it.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of on that idea of being ready for the fall, gathering materials such as, when the leaves start falling, start raking up some leaves and gathering them up in bags, having them available for you to put on the beds. Or a lot of people will be growing in containers. And those containers, if you have perennials in those containers, something that's going to, you want it to make it through the winter, then providing some insulation on those by packing around straw or leaves around them and then covering those with plastic and having those materials. That's what I'm trying to emphasize now, is that gathering up these materials at this point while you still have a few weeks to, and going to the store and finding these materials, buying these materials or finding them, pulling them out, and being ready for what's to come, because it's coming. And so the frosts are coming, the rains are coming, and now is our chance to do this while the sun is shining. So a few other things to consider are your plants going to be exposed to wind? Have you seen wind damage on any of your trees or shrubs over the wintertime? Now is the time to consider windbreaks. If you want to, you see the burlap wrap around a lot of the arborvitae type of plants. Does it seem like if they are experiencing that type of damage, now's your chance to consider, building a structure to protect it, or to just have a strategy for that. so many things in preparing for the coming freezing. Think about water. Think about how you're taking care of your things, whether they be buckets, hoses, things like that. Mm. One of the things that we encourage once you're done with your primary, you know, growing season is to consider doing a soils test. If you contact my office or look online with UAF Cooperative Extension, you can find information about how to do a soils test. But this is the opportunity in the fall to amend your soils, to add what is recommended, especially liming to bring the pH up is a general tendency that we need to do here. And then so I can provide recommendations for how much to mm-hmm. add and so that it's ready in the spring. So doing a soils test, if you want to kind of just get a little bit of an idea of what's going on in there chemically.
So you do that right before maybe you cover it and protect it and stuff, yeah. right, or whatever?
Yeah, 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 in preparation. Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I just had the opportunity to interact with some of our awesome folks with the Juneau Rotary Club a mm-hmm. couple weeks ago, and they've kicked off their bulb sales. So they and others in town have bulbs available to purchase, and so getting ready to plant your bulbs—that's a whole, you know, another kind of topic that—and we've talked about actually bringing in some other experts on this, and that might be a topic that we might want to do that in one of our future weeks coming here.
Yeah, I did that a couple of years ago. It was cool. Really fun.
Yeah,
plant the bulbs. Yeah. We're almost out of time, but I did want to mention a couple things that you have, you know, on the winter to-do list. I know we can talk about this another time, maybe before we wrap up the season of Garden Talk. But one of them that I love here is review your garden journal.
Yes. Yes,
I love
indeed.
That. Yeah. Oh, that's kind of fun. Like, use what you learn to improve your garden next year. Always iterating, getting better, figuring out what worked for you. Like the man with the asparagus.
Yeah.
Figuring out what might work and what you might need to do differently. And also, you say investigate new plant varieties in different seed catalogs. Maybe you want to expand your horizons a little bit. Just something to think about, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Keeping good records because keeping track of what's worked and what hasn't. Also for crop rotation, because a lot of our pests prefer specific plants. And so having a strategy for what you're going to plant in what part of your garden and rotating that is a important gardener strategy for people who are planting annuals, especially annual food crops.
I love that. Is there one more thing you want to mention quickly?
Well, since we're kind of towards the end, I would just like to give a plug for tomorrow. I'm sure many of you are in the gardening community and foodie community are aware that tomorrow's the local food fest. Mm-hmm. I'll be there with my extension colleagues and many of the gardeners of Juneau. And so 10 a.m. at the Jack until 2. And so we can talk, come and talk my ear off about gardening. And then later on in the afternoon, also at the end of the season, we have seeds. And so if people want to be gathering their own seeds and learning how to do that, I just saw our friends with the Juneau Garden Club are hosting the amazing Ginger Hudson with the City Arboretum. She's going to be doing a talk at 3 at the library tomorrow.
Awesome.
As well. Yeah.
Okay.
At the downtown library.
Okay. So, yeah. Check that out. Yeah, the farmers market and food festival tomorrow,
yes,
at the Jack from 10 to 2 with some demonstrations. I appreciate it, Darren, for coming in on this episode of Garden Talk. Appreciate you being here.
Yeah. Thank you, Boston.
that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. We air Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Akbe 91.7. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. You can also find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Programming support comes from Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Grass, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Gonna cheese. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you.